down to us, and I'll look for that later, as we're sitting at more time. This morning, I just want to hold a hearing on a problem that we've faced during the last couple of months, and that's the lack of money evidently for the different loan programs. And define specifically what the problem is and a potential solution. I've asked both the Department of Revenue and the Department of Commerce and Economic Development to testify before this meeting to see if we can come up with some idea of what the problem is. First of all, I'd like to have Sterling Gallagher testify. Yes, I think it was you that made the decision. Could you explain in detail?
Thank you. For the record, I'm Sterling Gallagher, I'm the Commissioner of Revenue. In the general fund balance, at the end of this fiscal year, it's going to approximate somewhere around $550 million in the general fund balance. During the year, and that's an ending year number, during the year we drop below that number considerably due to cash flow. We get most of our cash flow in the last day of the year. That comes in about $170 million. So you take 150 from the general fund balance, and you might drop down as low as 400, and that is kind of my target that I shot for to have in the loan programs. Now, how did we get into this condition in the first place? In many ways, we're victims of our own success. 4 years ago, when we came aboard, we looked at the programs like the State of Veterans Program, and it was taking 4 to 5 months to process a loan. The reason it was the time period in which things moved through the revolving loan accounts. The Commissioner of Revenue at that time required that the Department of Commerce deliver to the Commissioner of Revenue a loan that's fully complete with all the documentation, title insurance, a deed of trust, insurance, the whole nine yards. Now that process there takes, the date a loan is closed, about 60 days. And so if a loan was initiated in that account, it would sit in that account for 60 to 70 days before it can be sold. Now if the revolving loan account is very small, it wouldn't be in there for very long. I mean, it'd be in there for quite a while. In fact, you couldn't start any new loans until you got this other loan moved out, which would be in there a good length of time. And so what we adopted what was a practice in commercial banking, which is this equivalent to what we call a warehouse line in the banking system. And that is, you give us an assignment of the deed of trust on the day that you close the loan, and you have a commitment to deliver all documentation within 60 days. And that, by writing that sort of agreement between the two departments, it physically speeded up the processing. Now they can come in for the amount of the revolving loan account, get a commitment from the department, we'll fund that, and they'll deliver all the documentation within 60 days. That move there speeded up the processing on veterans loans at that time from 4 to 5 months down to 3 to 4 weeks. And there were a lot of people being turned off at the 3 to 4 month, 5 month waiting period. They just couldn't wait for their financing, so they went other places. And they did that increased the volume. It's got so the volume in that program is up probably around $10 to $15 million a month now. It's having it probably has 20% of the total loan market of the state. The small business only has a $460,000 revolving loan account. You can see if you have a $300,000 loan without doing a warehouse line agreement, you can only keep two loans in process at one time. So it was only through this method could the programs be speeded up. Well, now the statute says I shall buy, but it doesn't say what are the collateral requirements that I should buy under. It was by changing the collateral requirements between the two departments is the method in which I slowed it down. I'm still fulfilling the statute, as I shall buy, but it, we're just gonna get, deliver the documents 6 years, you know, when the loan is totally complete. Now, in, at the end of November, we had $327 million in loan programs, and I had another $110 million in commitments. That, and loans in process.
Could you repeat that?
327 loans on the books, and $110 million in process or committed to. That was somewhere over $400 million. At that point in time, I said, we better slow this thing down. Somewhere, right now we have somewhere around 340 to 345 plus 124 in commitments outstanding. So we, you may have committed on the books up to $450 million of loans. I really think you should only have about 400 on the books.
Why?
Because if you have, end up with a general fund balance of 550, you need approximately 150 to operate. That pulls you back down to 400. The rest of the money in the general fund is either bond construction or float. And I don't think you should be using either one of those in the loan programs.
Senator Ray?
I wonder if we could just have Mr. Gallagher just identify the loan programs he's talking about. He's talking about loan programs. And maybe you could just identify them.
The major ones, Senator, that they're having the volume is the veterans at about $15 million a month, 12 to 15, and the small business at 10. The fishing, I think, is at 1 or 2 a month. So that's the major three. The other three see very, very little activity.
That's tourism?
Tourism, child care facility, historical site.
What I meant, Mr. Chairman, thank you, is could you identify how much is already in those programs? What I mean, how much, how much is now in the veterans program? How much is in the agricultural loan program? How much is in the fisherman's program, et cetera?
I'd be happy to bring those numbers. I don't have with me today, sir.
But the full total is around 500?
No, 327 as of November 30th, plus you, that was on November 30th. I don't have the final numbers for December, but it's probably 340.
Thank you.
So it was at that point in time that when we had over $400 million in commitments that we decided to slow the programs down. And that's what we did, was change the collateral requirements between the two departments. Now, we told them that we would honor any commitments that they had, loans in process, any commitments they had outstanding on December 31st. Anything that came in after that date would have to go back to the old process of delivering documents after 60 days. After, you know, after it goes through the revolving loan fund, meets all the standards.
Senator Ray?
Chairman, from this, on the balance figures here, that Veterans Affairs balance is $222 million, $222.5 million. Small business is $31.2 million, commercial fish $21.1 million, tourism is $13.1 million.
Yeah, he also has some ASHA loans in there.
You have some ASHA loans in there, sir?
Yes.
And your annual payments that you get back out of this is what, 12, 13, 15, 16, 30, about 70 million?
The principal pay down and the interest?
Annual payments, you said.
Well, probably principal and interest paybacks are around, all around 45 million a year, principal and interest paybacks both combined. Most of those loans have a 7 year average life. So you can, like on the veterans program, you can pretty well consider that that you're going to see, let's say you have a $228 million portfolio. This year you're going to at least have $25 million principal payback plus the interest. Now, the age life in that portfolio is fairly recent, so it's not going to be meet the 1/7 rule, but let's say it was all put on a steady stream, you could consider about 1/7 would be paid back every year. Because a highly mobile society here up here creates that sort of loan life on a veteran's loan.
Mr. Chairman? Commissioner, on the veteran's loans, that's a composite loan, that's homes and business.
Yes, sir.
Does anybody here have an idea of just about what the split is?
Say the single family.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Jack Tinsley, Director of the Division of Veterans Affairs. I'd say between 80% and 85% for our family.
Dwelling.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Well, with, now our cash flow is such that we, if nothing is done on the loan program and the oil companies didn't pay, and then we don't know whether they're going to pay yet, things like that on the income tax under regulations that we are adopting in the next few days, we would have to borrow to somewhere around $60 million just for operating purposes this year. And I don't especially like to be into the market. I don't very short-term borrowing, and that's one of the reasons that I did this. I don't think it's helpful to our issuing long-term bonds if we show some instability of having to borrow on a short-term basis. I
don't understand. You felt there would be a necessity to borrow on a short-term basis, Quentin?
It may be in June if the oil companies don't pay on the income tax.
They're not due to pay for September 30th?
Under regulations I'm issuing this week, I'm asking for advance payments, just like an ordinary income tax has quarterly payments throughout the year. I'm asking that to be paid on March 15th.
I don't understand. Last year, you were projected to have them paid September 30th.
Well,
and,
the tax is due there, but like an ordinary income tax, Senator, it's due on, let's say, September 30th, but there's quarterly payments due throughout the year.
If they don't pay till September 30th, what do you estimate to be the balance on June 30th?
The June 29th would be, it could be between minus 20 to minus 60, somewhere in there.
And then the next day?
We'd have $150 million balance.
$150 million?
Yeah.
And
but
then June or September 30th?
We'd be well again.
You don't know how much though?
We don't know what the final regulations are going to turn out to be, but it's going to be a 160 plus.
Are you concerned that perhaps they might not pay it off?
Yes, I am.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
can you remember any going back in all the years that you've been here? What, 4 years now?
Yes, sir.
And you know. For those 4 years, but can you remember any year, or perhaps you can just give us a resume of any years that the state has, their income has exceeded their annual budget?
Yes. The income received exceeded the annual budget since 74 or 75 and 76.
To what extent, sir?
At the end of 74, we had a fiscal balance of $372 million, and we have one right around $650.
Perhaps I'm not making myself. I'm talking about individual years' income, not what you had in balance, but not what you
that's
got forward.
That's what I'm giving you the ending year balance, which kind of gives you a progress. End of 74, we were $372, and we built it back up during the pipeline boom years, back up to around $650.
Just excluding the $900 million we got from the loan.
That excludes the $900 million. Remember, we had a drawdown there, Senator, 70 on down. We got down to 1974, down to $372 million. And then we, during the pipeline years, the income off the individual income tax came in huge, a lot huger than we ever expected. And we built all the balances back up to around $650.
Cumulatively, then, what are we talking about here?
We have $650 million in surplus. At the end of last year, we're going to be down to about $550 million at the end of this year due to...
Peter, I'm not asking the right questions, or I don't understand your answers, or, because perhaps I'm early in the morning.
Well, maybe this is a complicated area, and I'm not explaining myself well enough. Our income in the years 75 and 76 exceeded expenditures in those 2 years to the tune of about $270 million. Mm-hmm. Now, this year, and then the next year, 77, it stayed even. 78, or this fiscal year, it'll be minus approximately 90.
Now, is this exclusive of the free advance that the oil companies gave us?
No, that includes that free advance.
Yeah, in other words, we're paying them back, and then all of a sudden now we're short, then we're going to have to put out bond anticipation notes of about $150 million?
Probably no more than $70 million if we have to do it this year.
This is the first time we've ever done that?
Yes, sir.
First time in the memory of the state?
It goes back quite a ways.
How much are you paying right now?
I'm not borrowing presently.
Back to the prepaid tax that I know.
That credit will be completely consumed by late 1980. We only have about another 18 to 20 months of that credit to be completely consumed.
How much this year?
About $115 million.
Okay, Sterling, when did you decide to pre-purchase? When did that occur?
We started the pre-purchase in the Veterans Program in 1975. And we started to pre-purchase in the small business after you people opened up the offices this last year in the various towns. And that really got the volume going. Because at that point in time, the lines were getting... it took 25 months to get a loan process.
In 1975, you decided to pre-purchase?
And veterans. And in the small business, we didn't do it until 1978. Is that correct?
A year and a half ago.
When we increased it, Mr. Chairman. When we increased the
offices.
Well, the offices and the maximum amount you could borrow under the program.
Right.
From 900 to 300 pounds. Anticipating this problem, Have you thought of a solution to slow it down? Have you thought of any other solution whereby we might continue to maintain some fire in the economy?
Senator, I don't think there's any way you can presently maintain the full volume that you're doing. I think there's ways to do half to two-thirds of your present volume, which is still a very significant program. Currently, we're doing 25 to 30 million a month, and that's an awfully big program.
How about in terms of loan guarantee versus loan purchase?
A loan guarantee program, I guess, again, wouldn't be put on our book, it'd be put on someone else's book.
I'm saying that's a possibility, though, isn't it?
But it won't save them that much money.
Won't save who that much money?
The other parties. I mean, what we're talking about is some loan going from, let's say, most people can borrow at somewhere over prime. It wouldn't go below prime.
Let's give the figures what you think they could borrow, assuming a safe guarantee program.
I don't know, sir. I'd have to look at the individual loan. And, that would be... It depends on the risk of the project and other things.
No, I think you can get closer than that.
Well, Senator, I got to know the life of the loan, the collateral of the loan, the whole nine yards.
Okay. On an average, what do you think it would be? What is it today?
There's no average loan. Like marine ship financing. You have a federal guarantee on that bond, but because it doesn't trade well, it's an unknown market, it trades no better than a AA bond. Now, that's a fully guaranteed by the United States government, yet it trades like a AA bond. That's the point on guarantees, is you got to know the market and the liquidity of the instrument before I can answer the question.
Well, Commissioner, I think you're making it overly complicated. We're talking in terms of a loan program under which you could describe the average loan. And I can tell you, if you don't know, that the commercial market today is 13%, 14%, 15% money. I don't care what kind of loan you got, unless it's a guaranteed loan. Now, if it's a guaranteed loan, I'm curious what your impression might be as to what that rate might drop to.
The SBA, or the SBA guarantees, or the FHA guarantees are now going for 10.7, 10.6 to 10.7.
Okay.
I'll give you some reference. Now, the state would trade quite a bit higher than that, so at least be overloaded.
If we say 2 points or 2.5 points by a state guaranteed program, can you calculate what that might mean on, say, a 25-year loan? Or
I don't have my calculator back.
I can tell you then. It's about the equivalent to the amount of the principal on a 25 or 30-year loan. So that's significant in terms of a state guaranteed program compared to no assistance.
The second question I have to ask you, Senator, where are you going to get the guarantee from?
I'm saying that. Is that an alternative we could
I would have to see the guaranteed structure to it, exactly how it works, to tell you how what it's worth.
Okay, maybe we can show it to you.
Senator Ray?
Well, just to carry on here, Senator, I think if memory serves me, even though you have a state guarantee, the lending institute can call that paper in any time and you have to pick it up.
In default. He'd have to commit to hold it for the whole life. He just can't willy-nilly come in.
Well, I don't think that you're going to find anyone. The lending institute is going to lend something with a state guarantee at 10% when they're putting it out at 14, and then people are beating on the doors. Well, I don't know what kind of a market you'd have on that.
Not many people are buying. No one's doing FHA loans up here. That's part of the problem.
Well, that's the whole thing. What I'm saying is that even if you had a state guarantee on it, who would lend the money?
There is a significant difference in the volume of money that's being borrowed at 11%, 12% than there are at 13 and 14%. I can tell you that in my own case, it's about $200,000 just this year in monies that I can borrow and use profitably at 12%. I cannot use profitably at 14%. So I'm sure that there are other people in the marketplace out in the same situation and the same problem. And if that's the case, then I'm saying that there's conceivably hundreds of millions of dollars that could be circulating in our community in terms of... Go ahead.
You done?
Oh, I'm trying to get some information because I haven't bargained with you. What I'm talking about is that yours is a short-term loan in relationship to a 20-year mortgage on a house. And they'd be more than willing to turn yours over 11-12%. When you start in talking about tying it up to 14 or 25 years, they're going to take the top dollar. And that's why I was asking about how much it was in, what you say, 85% are in home loans.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Chairman, if I can respond.
In
terms of commercial loans, is where I'm talking about, and in the small business loan program, which is a significant part of the loan portfolio. That's money in terms of building commercial buildings and hangars, support facilities. Those type of loans are anywhere from 15 to 25 year loans. And what I'm saying is that presently people won't pay the interest rate that's being required or demanded right now in terms of the commercial market. And what I'm thinking is if we could some way make money available through a guarantee program that would drop that point and a half or 2 points, that would increase the money traffic and be a direct or an immediate boost to the economy.
In other words, you're putting more emphasis on small business at this particular time. In other words, possibly making them more money available than they would on different loans, like in talking about, they got $259 million in investment loan, they only got $32 million.
That's one of my complaints, is that there hasn't been enough
money.
Now, I appreciate your assistance, and I wouldn't segregate out any loan, any program, anything that tends to continue the pace of the economy or maintain the pace of the line of support. And I'm just looking for ways that they've been caused to arbitrarily slow down the loan programs, and I'm trying to exploit some way that might generate some
money. Let me tell you the steps I'm taking to alleviate some of your concerns. Over in the bond construction fund, I can pretty well tell my cash flow pattern. I'm stepping up my sales, bond sales, and using that money, and I can see the projects coming online, I know when they're coming online, I can put some of that money in the banking system. I'm taking money out of the general fund, I'm moving over to the bond construction fund, I put out money 2 days ago for a year, the bond construction money, the bond construction fund. The average yield, and that was somewhere around 10.7 for a year that we got back on that money. Also, I've told the banks I'm willing to issue what is called a standby commitment for commercial projects to be done in the state out of the pension funds. If I do that, the advantage to them is they can go ahead and get the project constructed before they go try to sell it to an outside investor. I price these things at a high enough rate, it gives them all incentives in the world to go out and find an outside investor at a cheaper rate. But meanwhile, they go get this project constructed so the investor can see what it looks like, and it really facilitates the movement of commercial projects into the market. And I'm willing to do that, and meeting with the banking industry to work out the program.
Senator Sumner?
By mustering all of your expertise in that area, can you maintain the rate of the amount of money that at the rate it's been going the last year?
No, sir.
How much are we going to see in terms of state generated dollars available for that market by all of our techniques or means presently available today? How much are we going to see a drop?
I think a standby commitment would add 10 to 20 million total a year to a market. I'm currently purchasing 60 in the mortgage pension fund, so I might add another 20 to it.
Is all of this money that you're putting out in state, or do we have money that's now outside of the state?
Well, now the pension fund program, I've committed to keep that's a trust account, and I've got to keep an overall portfolio strategy. And yes, I have 60% of that money outside the state. But, you know, I do have 40% of it inside the state. That's over $200 million.
So $300 million approximately is outside?
Yes. But I am committed to earning the highest return possible. I think by issuing these standbys, I can get a lot more fee income into the account and make it profitable for everyone concerned.
Commissioner. Did you ever go into purchasing foreign currency, Japanese yen, etc., with no. Retirement funds?
No, but I'm going to have a bill that proposes that.
I'd like to know how you, not necessarily that I disagree, how did you arbitrarily set $150 million as your bottom line?
Sir, we get in about $170 million the last year, and you draw down all during the calendar year and down until the last day, and then you get well again. That's 150 to 170 million in that range.
What was your drawdown instead of?
We get in property taxes on the last day of the fiscal calendar year. We get in about 170 million. All the rest of the year, if you have a balanced budget, you're going to draw down theoretically all your cash during the other 11 months. Well, and
so you set it at the level of the property tax?
Right.
Are there any questions,
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Sumner?
Let me go back to one minute. $300 million that you have invested outside of the state, how much do you anticipate you earn? How much more do you anticipate you earn by having it invested outside than you could generate by investing inside of the state?
Well, Senator,
like percentage points or?
It depends on the market. Now, I'm putting money into the mortgage market because markets move on each other. The mortgage market now is yielding a historical high in comparison to the corporate bond market. I'm putting money into the mortgage market, but increasing my money into the mortgage market, which is in state versus out of state, due to the historical spread differences. Now, if that relationship ever changes, I'll move back.
No, okay, maybe. I'm not getting through the answer.
Well,
I'm not trying
to
audit on you and anything like that. I'm just trying to find out over a period of year, do you earn 1% more by having...
Historically, mortgages have yielded the same as corporate bonds. Right now, they yield about 1 to 1.5% more. So to give you some idea why we moved into the mortgage market versus seeing the corporate bond market.
Okay. I'm just trying to
differentiate
outside
the
things I see.
Well, I do it on, you know, which parts of the market can I make the most money? Now, if with the corporate bond market, I can make more money, I would be shifting my funds out of mortgages and into corporate bonds.
I know, but going back to the answer we talked to you, gave me a bit ago, that said you had about $200 million invested in state and about $300 million out of state. The purposes of investing the $300 million out of state was because it generated more money and you had a commitment
to do
that.
Under ERISA, you got to keep some sort of diversification in your investments in a pension fund. And that's part of the diversification, too. You can't have all your eggs in one basket. Let's say we had an earthquake in Alaska and, you know, half those homes were wiped out and all that, you know.
Right. But I'm just simply asking you about how much more do you make on the $300 million than you would...
I don't think I make anything more. I think I get my highest yield in the mortgage portfolio, and that's why I've been expanding it.
Senator Ray.
Commissioner, you've been operating this program at this level for 4 years, as you see.
Mm-hmm.
And a majority or a good share of this 259 million veterans is in the housing.
Yes, sir.
Is there the possibility there has been a lot of refinancing through the veterans and people previously, the 4 years, who have borrowed money or had to borrow money at 10 and 11% in order to build those houses, have all of a sudden taken advantage of the program? In other words, really, there hadn't been too many new houses built. It's just been a shuffling of the money from the bank over to the state at a lesser interest rate.
There has been a lot of that because it's to their personal advantage.
Any further questions for the commissioner?
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Commissioner Conley to come up and just people to discuss the problem.
Senator, my name is Charles Weber. I'm newly appointed Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development. I took the office on Monday. I was aware of the problem from the first of the year and had been having discussions with the department on what remedies might be applied in order to keep a flow of money through loans into the economy. We have, I think, some answers to the problems. I would like to ask Bert Wagner, the Deputy Commissioner, to come forward and with his staff available, Mr. Deans and Mr. Tinsley, and discuss the matter and some of the remedies. So at that point, I think, Bert, with your permission, Senator, we'll go ahead and get right into it.
Okay. Hey, I'm Bert Wagner, Deputy Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development. We've been working on solutions since about July when we thought we could see the problem was going to occur. We break the problem into two segments, the veterans and the division of business loans. If you'll allow me, I'll take the veterans first and what we propose to do. They're interrelated. What we had to do is we looked around, what were our alternatives? We think we have an alternative for financing veterans housing. We have been in discussions with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation for about since July, working on various alternatives to attempt to come up with a solution. We have one that we think the Board of Housing Finance will agree to. They're holding a meeting on February 6th. We'll make a presentation to the board at that time, hopefully for their approval. What it would involve is housing finance basically taking over the function of financing veterans loans. This will require an affirmative vote by the Board of Housing Finance and a regulation change on their part. Start with you, Senator. I'll give you an overview, and then perhaps Mr. Tinsley can fill in some of the details. But this should occur February 6th here in Juneau is a meeting. Hopefully by April, they could be funding vets mortgages. Some of the advantages. One, it's an alternative that's available, and we can put it in place quite quickly. What's happening now is we've drastically slowed down our veterans program. Mortgages are beginning to back up in the market. that we think this can be in place hopefully by mid-April. The limit now with housing finance is $75,000 for a single-family dwelling. Our limit through the Division of Veterans Affairs is $68,250. That would be an advantage to the veteran. They could buy a more expensive home. Disadvantage, interest rate. Right now, we're charging the veterans 7.5%. Housing finance, if my memory is correct, Senator, right now is at 8.5%. There would be an increase. However, I believe market right now is bouncing 10.5% or 11%. Other disadvantage, the veteran's going to have to pay a little bit more closing costs. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me of what a comparable $70,000 house would be. I can work those up and get them for you. They would be more. The exact amount, I don't have right now. It will take a regulation change by housing finance to remove the low and moderate provision for a veteran. I'm informed that this can be done by regulation for housing finance, and it will not take a statute change.
Chairman, I didn't understand.
Senator Holmes,
would you explain that again?
About the regulation, the low and moderate. I've been informed that the Housing Finance Board can vote to change the regulation to allow a veteran to apply and receive a loan through housing finance without the income limitations applying. Housing finance has certain limitations that I don't have off the top of my head. If your income exceeds a certain amount, you're not eligible for the program. What housing finance would hopefully do for us would, in the case of a certificated state veteran, would waive that limitation. You're a vet, you're a qualified state vet under the existing statute. Our division would issue a certificate attesting to that fact. Housing finance would waive that income limitation, allow them to use the existing Alaska housing finance vehicle to obtain funding. A couple things we do like about the program. It utilized the local existing commercial banks that are participating with housing finance at this time, i.e. Bank and Fairlinks that's participating with housing finance. The veteran would go there for the loan. That's a brief summary of that. I'll give an overview of what...
Before I get to which one,
Senator Ray?
You're saying that some of the banks are going to get into this now? Are we going to have another operation like we had before, and the bank picks up all this bump paper or shuffles all their bump paper off onto the state?
Excuse me, Senator Ray, I can expand maybe a little bit more. I might not have been very clear on that point. Presently, we're not talking about selling old loans that we're holding across the street right now. This would be new loans only. Veterans starting mid-April who wants a home loan, he's going to go to a participating bank. As it works right now with housing finance, most banks in the state have an agreement with housing finance. They process the loan. They do a lot of the work, closing, and housing finance is the funding vehicle. Most of the borrower's contact is with the local financial institution who then forwards it on to Alaska Housing Finance for the underwriting review and approval. And what we're proposing here is a veteran would do the same thing.
And the last housing finance is all for the arrangement?
Senator Ray, I can't give you that commitment. It's a fairly independent board. We worked with them very long and very hard. I'm extremely hopeful for a positive vote on February 6th. If I don't get it, I've got a real problem. But it's the quickest alternative I could come up with to keep the mortgage
rabbit. Rabbit. Don't throw me in the briar patch.
Senator Bennett?
I understand what you said, but maybe I don't. If this scenario goes through, the veterans loan will go from 7.5% up to 8.5%. The veteran will be required to have greater closing costs, and he will essentially be lumped in with low income.
Basically, that's correct. I can't guarantee the 8.5 rate. The rate that housing finance money is available depends upon the bond market.
Maybe a philosophical thing I'm missing something. In this scenario, are we relegating veterans into a low-income bracket, or It seems to be something that the veterans sent to me.
If the market's at 11 and you can get money at 8.5, that's relegating. I'd sure like to be relegated, I think.
Well, what I'm saying is the veterans thing philosophically is set up for the reason these people have done something for the country and state. And I don't like to see, if I perceive this right, I don't like to see them being shifted in to a different category. You may go I see some philosophical differences.
Senator, may I respond to that? I think what we're trying to do here in order to get this thing back on track is expand the use of home finance. And if they're agreeable to it and can make the necessary changes, then they do have a vehicle to keep those loans flowing. The two things that have occurred here are kind of interesting. Number one, the money market interest rates have gone up rather drastically. More people have come into these programs. And the other thing is that there's been more of the selling job, which caused the impact. Now, in order to relieve the situation, it may be advisable to use this vehicle. And I think, as the deputy commissioner says, it takes the agreement to home finance. But in no way does it relegate, is it intended to relegate the veteran to any new situation. It's only to enlarge the scope of the home finance activities to pick up these loans and still keep the advantage of interest to the veteran.
Senator Ray?
The only thing is, just going back in my own mind, we had a bunch of bankers that were running around trying to put this Alaska Housing Finance Corporation into action. They were the ones, the bankers themselves, the ones that, and for whatever reason, I could never figure out exactly why they wanted a competing operation with their own institution. And now all of a sudden they're going to control the whole thing, huh?
Mr. Chairman, what are the bonds selling for now?
They had a sale in late October, November. I think it was about 7.4. To get the exact number, I'd like to verify that.
Did you answer that?
7.4. I'd have to check with Housing Finance to get the exact rate.
Is there going to be a significant difference if they put more bonds on the market in terms of the interest rate that they'll be getting? Won't the interest rate go up?
Discussions with Housing Finance are that they don't feel the market for Housing Finance bonds is saturated. I think if they felt that, I don't think their board will approve it.
They have, what, $300 million on the market now?
I believe that's approximately correct, sir.
And you're trying to make it go up how high?
We feel that the maximum Housing Finance will have to do a veteran's mortgage will be $100 million a year.
So you don't feel that will saturate the market?
I feel it can be handled.
Senator Summer?
No, that was the same area I was going to ask.
I think it would take an underwriter to correctly answer that question. Of course, the market's moving, so I have no way of predicting. It could go up, it could go down. The cost of money to the veteran would fluctuate with the market.
Okay.
Senator, if you want to move now into the small business.
To modify and change division of business loans. Basically, what this would envision would be setting up and funding truly revolving loan funds to handle the program. Basically, what we're anticipating is the way this bill is worded, it will provide about $60 million a year, about $5 million per month to keep the business loan program going. We realize this will be somewhat of a reduction from what has been done in the recent past. However, we do feel that $60 million a year we can run a viable business loan program. We should have that bill by early next week. With that, I'll perhaps allow Mr. Jeans to take my place and can expand on that and answer any specific questions.
Mr. Chairman, this is Pete Jeans.
the Director of the Division of Business Loans.
Mr. Chairman, I think most of you remember last year when we had a similar situation to this. We have tried several different things, and I have a chart that can probably show you best what's happened to us. It might be hard to see from down there, but I had to extend it a little bit. But this period through here is last year, when we started going into the different areas and publicizing the programs. And applications jumped from this area through here up into, it almost doubled last year. We came back to the legislature and explained our problem, pretty near doubled our staff last year. Well, this gave us a staff that was large enough to handle approximately 75 applications a month. We also received funding to open an office in Fairbanks and one in Anchorage. This black line is the number of applications that we've received in all of our offices. This line here is when we opened the offices in Anchorage and Fairbanks. The red line coming up is Anchorage. And you can see in a period of 6 months, we're receiving more applications in Anchorage than we received statewide 6 months ago. This blue line is Juneau, which most of the Southeast applications. Fairbanks is slow, but it started picking up, so we've more than tripled in Fairbanks. It's still not that many. And as a result, we're getting, in November and December, we got over 150 applications each month. But we're staffed up to handle about 75. So we've got quite a backlog within our division. And when Sterling eliminated the pre-purchase, we had approximately 400 applications that we were starting or in some stage of processing. Now these applications totaled $65 million. Revenue has agreed to continue the system that we were using and pre-purchase any of the loans that we approved under $65 million. And there again, that's 400 applications. With the staff we've got, we're talking about 3 to 4 months to process those applications that we received prior to the first. He's also agreed to pre-purchase commitments that we've issued prior to the first, which totals about $35 million. So he has agreed to pre-purchase approximately $90 million in loans for us. We have tried to come up with some kind of alternative to get the funding so that we can, once we get this backlog cleared up, we can continue with some kind of basis, knowing how much money that we have. We've never had that before. It's always been the small appropriation. At first, it was a system that Sterling explained. We would make a loan, we would sell it to revenue, we'd get the money back. We could make 3-4 loans a month, about it. And when he started the pre-purchase, it declined from $500,000 to $1 million a month. To the point to where the last couple of months we're talking about $12 million a month, and this has happened over the last year and a half.
Just in the business?
Well, this is a combination of small business, commercial fishing, and tourism. Now, they're the major programs that we've got. The other programs are all very small. It's on the hatchery program, it's 1 or 2 loans a year. Child care, residential care, they're about the same. They're
predominantly small business, though.
It's almost split between small business and commercial fishing. It's about 40% in each one of those. These are just rough figures. Probably 10% in tourism, and the combination of the rest of them would be the smaller percentage.
Okay.
What we're proposing and the legislation that we're working on is that all of the loans that we've made under each of these programs will be appropriated back to the revolving loan fund. And an example of that right now in small business, he has $35 million. By the time he honors the commitments that we have, that he's agreed to take up, we're talking about somewhere between $50 and $60 million. Depends on how many of this $400 we approve. That money would be appropriated into the revolving loan fund. We would have the cash stream off of that to make new loans. In addition to that, we're asking for an appropriation of $45 million. That would be
split between the most active programs that we have, we're suggesting the small business, commercial fishing, we get the bulk of it, it's about 8%. Tourism, we get 5 million of it. And the hatchery program, we get 5 million. And we put 5 million on the hatchery program because we know what they're planning for the next year, and we know what they need to be. And this would give us enough money to make approximately 60 million in loans. This is going to be lower than what the number of applications that we're receiving right now. In the last fiscal year, we did 44 million total. So far, the first 6 months of this fiscal year, we've done 44 million. So we're not talking about the drastic cut that everybody seems to think we're talking about, but we'd be leveling it off at about 60 million a year, which is, it's going to be less than what we would do this year if we had the funding, but it's more than we've done any prior year. And at least we would have a true revolving fund. We know how much money we have. It would be appropriated to those funds. And if the time comes to when there's more money available, the legislature would be able to appropriate money to the funds. We would know exactly where it's going.
Senator Ray?
Mr. Ginsburg, just so I can get it straight in my mind, are you trying to mean that you're going to be able to turn over $60 million annually in all these?
Okay, that's what it would be for the next year.
But after loan that 60 million, then aren't you going to have to wait 10 or 15 or 20 years to get some more money back in as a revolving fund?
It wouldn't be that much, Senator. We wouldn't have the 60 million. It would drop the next year to where it would probably be about 30 million that we would
need. And then the next year after that, how much would it be in?
It would go up a little bit each year if we didn't receive another appropriation.
You can turn 30 million, Peter, is that it?
That's it, yeah.
Senator?
$60 million would be available for loans first year?
For the first year.
$30 million?
Because that includes that appropriation of 45. And it would be approximately $30 million.
Second year approximately.
If with no appropriations, it would probably go up by about $2 or $3 million a year.
Thank you.
Senator Sumner?
Okay, either I'm not following you, those numbers don't add up to you. You're going to have $60 million this year. $45 million is an appropriation. That would be $15 million in terms of monies revolving.
Okay, the appropriation, the loans that would be appropriated back to us would give us $100 million revolving loan fund to begin with.
Okay.
And then we would have the additional 45.
Okay.
So we would have the revolving fund would be $145 million.
Well, I understand that.
Cash stream off of that we would have the following year.
Yeah. But the cash stream, I understood you to say the cash stream plus the $45 million would give us $60 million to invest this year.
That's correct.
Okay. 45 then and 15,
15.
Is the $60 million.
Right.
How do we get to $30 million next year?
Based on the payments that we've had coming in, Bill, and this is what I went back and did. I went back and tried to get accurate figures on the. It would be some payoffs in that, and I think it would be very close to the 30 million.
I'm not going to pursue it any further, but except to say I don't see how we get from 15 million cash stream this year to 30 million cash stream next year. Maybe you can tell me later how we do that. How much is the average loan? What would the average loan be since we've...
This is just an estimate. I can get that figure for you, but I think it's probably around $100,000 small business and fish.
Okay, and your average at 75 a month, that's $90 million. You need to maintain the existing pace. If you're doing 75 loans a month.
Okay, it's been increasing so steady. Well, that's a tough question. The last 2 months, the number of applications has increased by 30 or 40 a month. And just in November and December, we received close to $50 million in applications.
What's the percentage?
The percentage of
interest.
Okay, and we want to try to tie the interest rate on these programs to a floating rate. And we want to try to make a conventional rate, and it would it was probably around 11%.
Okay.
11?
That's one of the problems that we have right now is we have different interest rates on all of these programs. And we're also talking about putting a provision in the statute to where if there's a program that the legislature wants to push to create a subsidy for that particular program to lower the interest rate and appropriate the money for the subsidy.
But the thing I just want to be careful of is that we don't suffer under the illusion that we're going to maintain something close to the existing loan rate pace that we're at now, because technically or realistically from the numbers you guys have given us this morning, you're really looking at currently at a rate of $90 million a year. And if that drops to $30 million a year, we're going to be back to about one-third of the existing rate. And so the reason I'm trying to, if you dispute that, I'll stand guided by it. Short of that, I'm going to try to find some way that we can close that gap as much as possible. So that's the reason I'm...
No, you're right. We're talking about it would be $60 million this year. The next year, it would drop to 30, and it would be up to the legislature to appropriate into the revolving funds that they thought the program should go. Which is, we talked about that a lot, and we felt that that's probably the way it should be. If the legislature wants to fund small business by an additional $30 million fund, should be appropriated into a revolving long-term fund. The way it's been in the past, with this pre-purchase, we built the loans up to $400 million, and basically it's unappropriated funds.
Senator,
was it my understanding, Mr. Chairman, today the same period you did, we're going to have to borrow $160 million bond anticipation to close the budget, and we're talking just to get by, and we're talking about increasing the money. Wonder what do we pay on bond anticipation? Do we get anything out of that? Do we have to pay on that, or what happens to the commission?
I don't think they come free.
I wonder if we'll be paying 14% for them and not 11%.
Senator Ray, one other thing that I probably should have explained. The $45 million that we're talking about on the appropriation is the cash stream that's generated now off of the veterans portfolio. That would be revenue, but it's the cash stream that's generated off of that is where we came up with 45.
Yeah, but I'm sure they figured that into the total general fund balance. I don't know. We'll have to figure out where all the money's coming from.
That I'm not sure.
Once again, Mr. Chairman, we're going to need that much just for the business part of it, and how much I don't remember what he said for the veterans. The veterans, we're going to have to give them.
Turn them over to AHRC.
Well, AHFC doesn't work for free, you know.
No.
We've appropriated a million to them already.
I don't know how many more million we have here for free. Any further questions, Mr. James? Go ahead, Commissioner. Did you have something else to add?
I was only going to comment on the floating interest rate, that would be a change from what I understand has been a conventional approach to a fixed rate, so it would follow the money market. One of the reasons, of course, of finding ourselves in a position like this is that a radical change in the money market where the rates are fixed, the interest advantage is significant. Acknowledge that there's an effort in every instance to pick up the advantage of that interest rate.
And I understand about 80% of that is for residential. 85% for residential workers. And we talked earlier, asked earlier about the percentage of that is refinancing. Is there a way of finding out from the commissioner or Mr. Kinsley how much of that money was for refinancing as opposed to reconstruction?
We can get that.
Do
you have an estimate right now?
No, sir. I couldn't give you any figures right now. I do know that every loan meeting that we have, there are a few that we are refinancing, and getting a lower interest rate through the veterans. They have an existing loan at one of the banks or savings and loans, and they come to the veterans program because of the lower interest rate. That's being refinanced.
The plan is to move the financing processing of these loans to the bank, I guess, from your department?
Yes, the bank would put the package together, send it to AHFC, and AHFC would service the loan from their own.
Is that going to result in a higher cost to the veteran?
Yes.
1%. Just 1%.
Senator Bennett?
Just one question. Doesn't some of these refinancing into the veterans program occur because of the 5-year residency requirement?
Yes, it does.
Doesn't it work?
It's a 5-year residency. 5 years more qualified program. Many people obtain financing until they have 5 years residency required.
Yes, would be any difference between the rate of interest given to veterans and most people in the HFC program?
No, AHFC gets their money from the bond market to service.
There's no subsidy that contemplated in the administration's proposal for veterans.
Sir, the only subsidy would be, like we said, housing finance. There is the 2% for their capital reserve fund. That's appropriate housing finance. So if VETS didn't come up at 100 million a year, 2%, we got 2 million we got to kick for that.
That results in a savings for the veteran?
Well, most surely, yes. If housing finance is running at 8.5, the market's at 11, there's something built in there somewhere to get that much.
Trying to differentiate between the veteran, the applicant, and the general public applicant.
Of housing finance?
Yes.
I can help you. The only break you get, according to the way you explained it, Mr. Chairman, is if he's earning over $24,000, which is the threshold to qualify for that rate, if the veteran's earning over that threshold, there is a subsidy in that. They're going to make an exemption for it. So if you qualify, even if you're in 30, 40, 50,000 a year, you still get the lower rate where you would not get it, where the general public would not get that rate otherwise. But I get the impression from what they're saying is that it's either that rate money or maybe no money in terms of that program, or certainly no new money programs. And I'm not endorsing it, I'm just saying what my understanding is.
Senator Bennett?
Just one question. What would be the additional cost for the veteran to buy the $65,000 house if he transfers over February or March or something? What would be his additional cost for that?
We'll compute that. We'll have to go take 65 and go through closing
costs. Isn't it a foregone conclusion that by going under this scenario, it's going to be added cost for that?
It would be some added closing costs.
So we're really taking some higher off the veterans along with this, right? Over their existing conditions, right?
Over the existing program. Yes.
Could you get those numbers for me?
I will today.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dankworth?
It is true also on that program that you've increased the top 68 to 75.
That's correct, sir.
So you will be able to open a little bit of money.
That's been a real bind to the veterans, too, because they don't get a whole lot of a house 68.
They have less of a down payment. Although the closing cost might be a little bit higher, too.
If that occurs, will that pretty much eliminate the veterans' loan division?
And there will be a decrease in personnel in the three regional offices that we have. But the general office located here, as you know, we don't anticipate any decrease in the service.
Yeah, why not?
Well, we have a big flow of paperwork over there that we're going to try to get caught up, and if the program slows down, we'll keep the people aboard until we do get everything caught up, get current. But if there aren't any loans being processed out in the field, like the Anchorage office, for example, and we have 12 personnel in that office, and I don't think we want to pay 12 people to sit around and do nothing. Now, we might be issuing certificate of eligibility to the veteran, and that would require maybe two or three people in the Anchorage office, one or two in the Fairbanks office, and one or two in the Southeastern office, which is located in New York.
further questions? No, thank you very much.
We've had to cancel the meeting for tomorrow. Ben Agee from RCA Alaskan is back in New York, and he'll be back next Thursday, as well as the Pacific Light Power Company personnel on the transfer of the telephone service. And so that'll be next Thursday. On Friday, I've asked Senator Sumner to chair that the meeting and go into the budget, general outline of the budget that the governor will have to post on Thursday. But as you know, in his state of budget message, you don't have that much detail. So Ron and Bruce, the head of budget management, will be here to show you the general categories and the increases, decreases, and what we anticipate here in some countries this coming year. Then Monday, we'll come back and meet at 9 o'clock. At that point in time, we should have most of our budget documents with us. And then I want to go into some detail on helping each individual on how to do the research on the budget and on the bills. Just go to a work session on that. And there are three of us that are new members here. There are old members here, and each one of us will help each one of you in terms of all the different tools that we use to work through the budget. Okay? So the next meeting will be 9 o'clock Friday.
And we have to make a presentation of the governor's budget this morning. The director of the Division of Budget and Management, Mr. Lynn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sackett contacted me concerning this. What he said he wanted was something less than an hour, a brief overview, kind of give the highlights and probably any other he'll answer any specific questions. Of course, the specific questions will probably mainly come about when you start reviewing the detailed submissions. And the specific staff, both on your staff and my staff, probably have more of the very detailed answers.
Did he also tell you to wear an asbestos suit?
No, sir. I have a few things I'd like to hand out here, if I might, just to plan on working from. First of which is a letter that I've addressed to the Finance Committee concerning some of the changes that have been made this year from previous years in terms of the actual budget itself. Basic points this letter addresses are five, and I think that they're fairly self-explanatory when one reads the memo, but there have been a few changes that affect the entire budget from the way it was done in the past. The major change is they changed the definition that we use for use in starting our base calculation. In fact, in the past, any of you that looked at budgets before have been familiar with and seen the term called maintenance, which was a base budget that started at a point where the service level stayed the same throughout the state. In other words, if you're serving 90% of the clients and your client load doubled, it would expect your base budget would double because you're going to still serve 90% of your clients. The new definition we're using is a term called continuation, which is fairly standard in a number of states now. And basically what it says is we're going to start at a point that only accounts for inflation and not workload increases as the base point. So effectively, the base point for evaluation of this budget is lower than it was in the past. Second thing we did was for all increases that people wanted, it was required that they separate them and put them on one separate form describing the increase for each type of increase. Effectively, this added some paper to the budget, but the reason we're doing this is so you could have a prioritization to actually stack up the increases that they wanted to have. Another thing we've done, and this was most helpful to us in our executive review, and created, if you will, kind of an intermediate budget. If you're all familiar with the detailed workbooks, there's just thousands of pages covering all the detailed specifics. We have what we call a cover program. It's a title that means that all of the agencies that are providing a certain type of service get together and jointly prepare kind of an overview of their request. And we divided the state up into 42 areas that we identified of this nature. Now, like I said, this was most helpful to us in reviewing the budgets. Basically, you could sit down with this prioritization, and there in sequential listing, all of the increments that all of the various agencies in that area wanted were listed. There's an individual description of each one of them. And in theory, and practice in some cases, the various agencies had actually gotten together and agreed upon prioritization. Two departments would get together and say, yes, in terms of this overall service, what you want is more important than the thing I'm asking for, so it should be listed first. These cover program submissions also have a narrative description of what the program's attempting to accomplish and such. So I think that's a new level that hasn't been available before. And I think that what I'd do is I'd commend to the committee that they seriously think about using that as the base point for their review and having the analysts, as we did, do the more technical detailed review within the workbook. And I think that that would highlight the main points that need to be highlighted. Data processing chargeback, this is just a minor item, but for a number of years, the legislature has been somewhat interested in having the data processing division on a chargeback system. Effectively, this means that each agency that receives their service budgets directly for it and then pays it to the Division of Data Processing, where it shows up as an interagency. What this means is that in the individual departments all around the state, you'll see increased requests for data processing services within what's called our continuation level. And they should just be viewed as a transfer from the Division of Data Processing. And just one other item that's far out of line with regular inflationary increases that affected almost everybody was the RCA rate increase. We did a detailed request through all the agencies for information concerning the impact of that request, and their estimate is, and we're requesting a supplemental for it, approximately $3 million for the cost of providing that. We put in a request last year to the pre-conference committee at the time the rate actually came out, but at that point they said it was too late to consider. Come back again this year. So that's something that affects virtually every budget and is far in excess of the inflationary amount. So there's no question, just that general statement. I think I'd like to go through basically the briefing that would cover the large items, the major funding difference, and have some time for some questions. The material I have up here on the board is an extract from the executive budget. It's also this handout right here. So if you want to look on that and sit on the board. What we're attempting to do is just show the comparison of the governor's budget with previous years, and basically 79 compared to 70 to 80. Current year, of all the appropriations that have been made, is about, and I'll only talk about state general funds, because that seems part that can be covered in the time we have available. About $894 million has been appropriated. The bill that the governor introduced in the operating area for 1980 currently totals $975 million. All right. We're saying that we expect ultimately to spend $900 million in 1979. We'll expect additional appropriations adjusted for supplementals, I mean adjusted for the lapse, of $7 million. Effectively over $20 million of supplementals requested for operations. But we lapse approximately 1.5% every year. So that says that we think we're going to spend $900 million in operations this year. Doing the same calculation for 1980.
Ron, you want to hold on?
Certainly.
Yes, sir. What are the supplementals? Just briefly.
Okay. Some of the supplementals are going to have to be for pay increases that we have required. AFDC and our assistance payments. We have increases there in those areas. We have, like I mentioned, the RCA rate case is approximately $3 million.
Majority, though, has been paying increases.
A good share of them are going to be in pay increases. And the same is for 1980. The appropriations we haven't requested yet, the majority of that in the operating area is going to be for pay increases. In fact, we haven't negotiated new contracts, and in some of the cases we won't even negotiate until next January. The majority of that. Okay. So we say with combination of these things, we think the total operating budget expenditures for 1980 will be about $1.005 billion, which is an 11.5% increase over current year estimate. Now, from our side of things, that was one of the limitations that the governor gave us. He said, as he said in his speech, was that we've got to put the budget together in a way that the real per capita expenditure in the state isn't going to increase from 79 to 80. And so that was the guide that we were using. Also contained within this number, we would say, is enough money to fund new legislation requests that, we're going to be making. It's going to be fairly minor in terms of cost items coming from the administration this year. Okay, so basically that covers 79 operating budget versus 80 operating budget. We say about 11.5% increase is going to be sufficient, we think, to cover things. The other is into the capital area. Comparisons there are not very useful simply because of the huge magnitude of capital appropriations made last year. Now, we've detailed in our document $18 billion of general fund capital projects. We say there's going to be another 6.3. We think we can fit it within that amount for a total of 25 million. The major difference there are two items. We haven't specifically picked the amount that's going to be requested for the bottom fishery program for 1980. The reason that's late is because there's a special report done by a consulting firm and being evaluated by the group of people that are working on bottom fish. And the report came in just before Christmas. There wasn't time to get it evaluated and placed into the document. The other item is capitalization to be required. In order to have a revenue bonding activity for land disposal, in other words, trying to find a way, instead of having the general fund have to front end all of the costs for subdivision improvements in boroughs on state land disposals, and set up a mechanism where that can be bonded and be paid off by the repayments of the people that are purchasing the property. Currently, the state, when it goes into a borough, say the Juneau borough, and decides to set up a land disposal program, would have to meet the same requirements that any other developer. Basically, have to put in sewer, water, and streets to a certain standard. And that's an extremely expensive program. I think one other item that I'd like to bring forward is the fact that even though the governor has continuously been saying that he wants to have the percentage of the operating budget being funded from non-petroleum increase, in this particular year it's actually decreasing, and that's caused by two items. Number one is the second year of the $100 additional tax credit, which approximates a $20 million reduction in our revenue, and the fact that the repeal of the gross receipts tax affects 1980 for the first time, and that's about another $20 million. So the combination of those two items means that our non-petroleum revenue is only going to grow by about 3%, whereas our budget's growing by 11.5% in the operating area. Now in 1981, under the current statutes, there'd be an additional $100 tax credit, which would be about another $20 million. And I think the projected growth in income tax at that point will be about enough to keep that equal.
You were talking about the governor talked about the about asking to increase the permanent fund percentage. What would that draw down the, you know, offhand?
Okay, the proposal for increasing the permanent fund contribution, I think, to take effect in 1982. In other words, to have it on the ballot for the next general election and have it take effect then. The projections that we have from revenues would say that we could continue this per capita, real per capita spending that we have now at that point. If you were to implement it today, it would take about $180 million out of the revenue stream.
One other thing. When we talk about per capita spending, and in the same breath talk about not increasing the budget, so to speak, isn't it true that there's a certain amount of government required even for a limited number of people, 200,000 people or 300? And from there up, it should not increase or be required to increase linearly.
Yes, there is a certain overhead function. You're not going to necessarily have, you're not going to have more legislators or another governor or things or another commissioner of an agency because of expanding
right.
population.
Right. Was that addressed at all in terms of trying to hold the line on the budget?
Specifically, no. In other words, we took it as an overall limit, 11.5%. I think when you'll find when we go through the items that create this difference here, this $81 million, you'll find out that there's virtually no expanded service, and it's almost all going into formula grant programs and items of that nature. So I don't think I think that basically I categorize the whole budget as just pretty much a hold the line of
okay.
current service.
Well, while we're at this point, the one thing I was curious about is this $1 billion budget really doesn't address all of the governor's priorities. Do you have a figure for that would include all of the priorities that we'd expect to see that would be attributed, say, to the governor or the administration, part of that, or an estimate of what it would be?
I think that I'd say that this does address all the priorities. I think that what he has said is that he's going to propose, say, an alcoholism tax and a related expenditure package there. There's a good chance he's going to propose a fuel tax increase and a related increase in reconstruction funds for transportation facilities. And it's true, neither one of those are put into this equation, but neither are the revenue estimates that would be derived from those expansions.
So for additional expenditures, you're projecting additional taxes or something to cover it, to cover those,
right?
Is that correct? Okay. So
direct. You mentioned the gasoline tax. Can you give some estimate about what that's going to bring in?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Senator, I haven't seen the specific proposal. I know that Department of Transportation people were working with the Department of Revenue on that. You know, what they were doing was generating a list of those road reconstruction and repair projects that would be the greatest life increase in the highway system and reduction in costs for people for a vehicle operation.
That isn't going to help any other part of the budget. It's my understanding that the governor's position is to tax those use programs and then return the money to them.
In the fuel tax area, I think the proposal is going to be to spend that money on transportation.
And the alcoholism tax. So then we aren't really gaining anything. We're just putting that same money back, or any increase we're getting, we're going to put it back into the program.
Okay, I think that that's our proposal. Now, if the legislature chose to increase the fuel tax, but said we don't think that there's a need to expand or increase road maintenance, but rather we ought to free up some general fund money and spend it on some other program.
Well, I think if I might continue, that's like a Alice in Wonderland story there. I think that most of us are crying and have been crying for years for increased road maintenance.
Well, perhaps road maintenance is a bad area. Maybe, I don't know if we can think of a tax where there isn't a specific expenditure that can be tied to it. Okay. I believe the other day you had a presentation from the Department of Revenue and the Department of Commerce on the loan program situation. And in terms of the budget, I just want to portray what the budget is doing to the general fund. Basically, the general fund, in terms of accounting, has a balance available. Then in terms of cash flow, there's a certain other amount available that's actually capable of being expended. We ended 1978 with $651 million as the general fund balance. That's true. That's a good, healthy percentage of the state budget. It looks like things are all rosy. In fact, I was just reading a national report that was done. It said that three states, Alaska, Texas, and one other state, accounted for over half of the state's balances. In other words, if you took all of the states in the nation, and you added Alaska, Texas, and one other, we had over half of the general fund balance that they had available. What we're doing, which most states don't, is we're operating loan programs out of our general fund. Instead of appropriating money to the loan program and operating it, we've been operating out of the general fund. So if you look at those types of investments, we had $338 million invested in that area, which said, to be comparable to other states, we had $300 million in terms of cash, if you will, or very liquid items that could have been sold and turned into state expenditures. The result of 79 operations, including major requests for the Susitna and for the D2, we're projecting that probably have, based on current revenue estimates, $72 million worth of a deficit. Now, there are some court cases in the revenue area that may be decided in our favor, and probably even if they are, they'll be appealed on to a higher court. But based on current information, we're saying $72 million deficit from operations, if you will.
Senator Wright.
Ron, on the unobligated, on your unobligated cash here, the $315,000,021, was in there, is there the possibility of the drawdown by the oil companies to return the money that we, that they prepaid? Yeah, they prepaid $500 million.
Okay. That's accounted for in our revenue estimates. In effect, we've reduced our revenue estimates by the amount of the offset they're having for their reserves tax.
All right. That doesn't answer my question.
I'm sorry.
What I'm trying to say is there still in the $313 million general fund balance, is there still monies that would, if the oil companies would say there was, they had a demand to get the money back that they had prepaid, would there still be part of that coming out of there? Mm-hmm. 200 and some million of that coming out of there?
I'm not familiar with that situation. Okay. As a result of operations, we're going to have $73 million. Our loan programs, as they've been operating for the first 6 months of the year, in fact, the agreement that they're going to purchase all that, Department of Revenue says that that could end up being as high as $178 million increase in our investments of that nature. The reason that the amount's not known is because there's a huge backlog of